Chinook, it's a warm wind.
It's a changing wind.
Chinook, a program for and about Alaskan natives.
Chinook Echoes is looking back into Native heritage.
How things are and how they got that way.
Chinook Patterns is information.
Issues that affect the patterns of Alaskan life.
Chinook Profiles, portraits of people, places, events.
But mostly the people who are Alaskan.
Welcome to Chinook Patterns. I'm Paula Schiller. Last year, Sam Dementiv, president of the Interior Village Association, came to our studio to describe IVA's program of services offered to the village corporations in the Doyon region. This year, IVA is extending some of those services to village corporations throughout the state. There will be a mailing to the village corporations outlining the services, and Sam Dementiv will attend village corporation meetings he may be invited to. I decided to visit him in his office to find out exactly what IVA is planning for the interior villages and villages around the state.
Well, we're going to continue to, of course, be offering our service to all the village corporations of the interior in the Doyon region. But in offering the services outside of the region, we have are going to call our services Village Computer Services. And we offer three services to the Village Corporation statewide. And those three services are computerized bookkeeping services, computerized stockholder record keeping, and annual meeting services. So those are not all the services we offer to the interior villages, but they are services that will be offered to that are of a general need to all Anska village corporations.
Did you do any market research before you decided to offer the services statewide? Do you know that you will have some ready takers outside the interior?
Yes, there was the Alaska Native Foundation Village Management Assistance Project has been working during the last year and a half with all the statewide village corporations, and some of their surveys and actual experience in dealing with the village corporations statewide has identified that bookkeeping services is a definite need and has been requested just about at every village corporation board meeting that they have attended. Now, the computerized stockholder record keeping service is something that is that every village corporation could use because their stockholder records are changing constantly. If in marriages or transfer of ownership, in deaths of the shareholders, or anything that relates to the ownership of the stock, they would have to have that maintenance of the stock record keeping within their village corporation. The third service, of course, is the annual meeting services. Now, that is a village corporations could say, well, we could handle our own annual meetings, but there is a lot of detailed work that has to be done during an annual meeting service, an annual meeting. And those are, of course, the mailing of the meeting notices in a timely manner, the mailing of the proxies, the annual audit reports to the shareholders, the financial statements that have to be mailed out. These all have to be done according to deadlines that are fixed, and we could do all those here in-house. We also have a packet that we mail out that has things to assist the village corporation in going through an annual meeting. That, of course, includes the agenda. These things might not sound like anything that is that's new or anything like that, but the agenda, a computerized printout that has all the names of all the stockholders that are eligible, or actual members of the corporation that they can check off against registration lists. Things along that line, Paula, is what the annual meeting services entail.
So it might take some of the details off the minds of the people that are organizing and attending the meetings, and maybe avoid some arguments?
Yeah, it is. It is. These things are, of course, take time, and in a village setting, usually don't have a duplicator or things that could help in speeding up this process. And we have all those things here in the office, and all we have to do is have a village corporation come in and say, well, we need some help for our annual meeting, and we have all the whole process all set up here, and all we have to do is have the dates of the meeting, and we can just take off and help them from there.
It seems to me it might put a little strain, though, on your personnel right now if all the annual meetings came up at once and you had to do all this business. Are you gearing up for extra business or an overload here?
Yes, we anticipated the, you know, selling the new services, and in doing that, you of course have to be able to handle any business that you might expect to come on board, and we have the capability here in the office to handle just about what we think would be coming in throughout the year. And of course, the idea is, you know, it's a service. It was designed by the village corporations themselves, and it identifies a need. Of course, these three are all needs of a village corporation statewide, and once again, it was it's designed not to be in competition with other service agencies that can provide this, but it's designed to help them and reduce costs primarily.
I was going to ask how it either competes or doesn't compete or combines with the VMA services and program.
Okay, presently the Village Management Assistance program that operates out of Anchorage under the Alaska Native Foundation is at a very low scale right now, and are not providing that much service to the village corporations statewide. And like I said earlier, the project did identify that all the village corporations that they dealt with definitely do need the bookkeeping services. And these other two services, like I said, are needed also. So we identified those ourselves through our working with our village corporation's interior, and just offered those services as being a general nature that is a need. And in competing with VMA, I don't think there is a competition as far as trying to nail down the business with a village corporation, primarily because VMA is, like I said, is at a low, operating at a very low profile now, and hopefully they will try to build their services back up, and if the village corporation chooses to use VMA services, that's their option, and all we're doing is trying to offer our services in the meantime, and we would hope that they would continue to use our services once we have their stock record keeping services and everything on file here in our computer.
Are you Iva the only outfit in town besides VMA, or the only outfit that is attempting to do this kind of thing?
Yes, right now IVA is the only group of this on this along this line that operates in the state, other than a group in southeastern Alaska called Katsik and Associates. But they're a profit corporation, but they do service the village corporations in the southeastern area. Of course, in the Nan area, the village corporations there have merged with the regional corporation, and there isn't too much activity there that we can get involved in. But we're concerned about the other village corporations existing throughout the state that might not have the option or know of these services that we do offer. And that's what we're trying to do, is trying to reach those village corporations. I have traveled to some of those some village corporations, and they have definitely asked if they could get our services, and now that we do offer these three services that they could use, we're trying to reach those village corporations too.
So you had some good response to the idea.
Yes, there is definitely the need is there, and all we're doing is trying to get our service site known to them. Paul, I just want to say that there are critical turning points in the future for the village corporations that should be recognized by the village corporations. Now, those turning points, of course, are when they get complete title to their land, and more critical one is the date of 1991 when their stock becomes eligible for resale to the public. Now, the village corporations presently are in the business of trying to make a dollar, trying to make a profit. But if they are turning all their attention towards that goal, then they are not really identifying or working towards the other goal, which is more critical, I think, and that's 1991, when they can actually lose control of their corporation. So these two things are turning points, or they're things that the village corporation is dealing with now, and we hope that one of these three services that we're offering will help identify some of these turning points in the future and help them meet those critical turning points.
How specifically will it help them? Will it help them have a better, a healthier bookkeeping and management? But how will it? There's no guarantee that having a healthy management will make a profit, and it also not guarantee that the stocks will not get out of hand or okay. be lost.
Yes, you're right. And these three services are not going to really actually help them meet the turning point in 1991, but it's going to get them involved in the corporation enough to start becoming really interested in it, and then bring out that turning point in the future. And if they're interested, for instance, I'm a stockholder in a village corporation now, and if I know what's going on in my village corporation, but if I wasn't actively involved like I am now, if I was there was a transfer of stock ownership to me, I would, and if my village corporation had a computerized stockholder record maintenance service with IVA, and I went in and said, well, how am I going to deal with this transfer of stock? They'd say, well, we have a contract with IVA, and they give us a service, and this is how it's done. And if I watched that action take place, along with the bookkeeping services, I think I would become more interested in it, and to see how, whereas before there was no active service in the village corporation, but now has a very active role in this. I think I'd become more interested in it to find out what is going on, and maybe turn on some of the lights of what is coming down the road in 1991.
1991 is a date Sam Dementev is worried about. As president of the Interior Village Association, he's trying to keep that nonprofit corporation afloat and help village corporations throughout the state get ready to meet that date when corporation stock goes public. For Chinook Patterns, I'm Paula Schiller, and this has been a production of KUAC-FM at the University of Alaska in Fairbanks.
Chinook, it's a warm wind.
It's a changing wind.
Chinook, a program for and about Alaska Natives.
Chinook Echoes is looking back into Native heritage.
How things are and how they got that way.
Chinook Patterns is information.
Issues that affect the patterns of Alaskan life.
Chinook Profiles, portraits of people, places, events.
But mostly the people who are Alaskan.
Welcome to Chinook Profiles. I'm Paula Schiller, and it's part of my job to read books about Alaska and interview their authors. I considered this a fringe benefit until I received an austere black book of some 185 pages, filled with charts and tables and containing very few pictures. If I were to judge it by its cover, I'd say it was a textbook. The title confirmed my suspicions. Eskimo School on the Andreevsky, a study in effective bicultural education by Judith Kleinfeld. I decided to read it anyway, and I was glad. It reads like a mystery story. You have a school, St. Mary's in the lower Yukon region, that seems to produce successful students with exceptional qualities. You become intrigued and wonder, how did they get that way? What's so special about St. Mary's? And all the who's, what's, why's, and wherefores get answered as each chapter unfolds. So one of the first questions I asked author Judith Kleinfeld is, what kind of book do we have here?
It can be used as a textbook. It was intended for teachers and for educators in rural Alaska who want to improve education. So much has been tried. St. Mary's appears to be working, and it appears to be working for reasons that are very different than those commonly assumed. So I tried to find out what was happening. Your example of a mystery is exactly on. That's how I felt about the school. I had never seen a school like it. I was used to public schools. It was a religious school, and I'm not a Catholic. So that was doubly unusual to me. It took me almost 5 years to study the school, and it wasn't until the fourth year that I began to even have some understanding of what was happening. The school was a mystery to the staff, too. They didn't have a well-defined theory of education. They were just kind of doing it. One of the Jesuit teachers said, "It's like grasping a handful of fog. You don't know what you're doing, but somehow the kids come out and they do well in college and they're leaders in the village. I like to have everything logical and organized, and I just can't stand it. I don't know why."
I hate to say that you've reduced St. Mary's to a logic and a system and have dissected it fairly thoroughly, although it did take you 4 years to do it. We should just start out with the mystery. Chapter one is what struck you about St. Mary's? How did you get involved in this?
The primary reason that I got involved in it was that I met many St. Mary's students at the University of Alaska. I was making no particular attempt to meet them. It was just that some of them would be in classes or some of them would be helping in various educational programs around. First of all, they were an unusual group of kids. They were eloquent, self-confident. They were firmly rooted in their own home tradition, thought of themselves as Eskimo, proud to be Eskimo, but were equally at ease in working with whites and in working with white strangers. You could talk to them as people. You could discuss problems without worrying that political things or stereotypes would interfere. You could talk honestly with them. When I asked them about their background and where they had gone to school, they immediately talked about St. Mary's and talked about it in a way I had never heard Native students talk about their high schools. Usually kids are pretty ambivalent. There were good things about the school and there were bad things about the school. But St. Mary's kept referring to it as a very great experience. This one student that I opened the book with said, "St. Mary's helped me to look at life more like a challenge and a healthy adventure, and it not only taught me chemistry and math, it helped me as a person, and I am very happy I went there." In fact, that was originally a title I was thinking about for the book, "I'm Very,
Very Happy
I Went There." The students themselves, in talking about St. Mary's and trying to explain why they liked it, would refer frequently to the family feeling, the warmth, the people who cared about you, the emotional atmosphere. That seemed to strike them. It's just some kind of feeling, one student said. It's a feeling of warmth. And that seemed to strike them as the most important. The boarding schools or traditional public schools concentrate on an entirely different aspect of education than St. Mary's was concentrating on. Most public schools, such as those I attended and perhaps you did, view their mission as technical instruction. They're teaching subject matters, arithmetic, math, and so on. The boarding schools, which many Native students used to attend, also viewed their mission as subject matter instruction, and they weren't very much concerned with the other aspects of life, personal development, except in the area of a few extracurricular activities. But St. Mary's was trying to help students grow in the personal area. Subject matter instruction was important, but it was probably the least effective part of the school. The subjects were taught no better and probably worse than they were at any other boarding school in Alaska. It was what happened outside of the classroom that was important to the education of students and important to the students themselves.
With the students coming from St. Mary's, even though they were taught no better and possibly worse, managed to do well, as a group, outstandingly well, I think in comparison with other students from some of the other schools and villages, did well in college. And it wasn't because they knew more things.
That's right. If you look at scores on conventional tests, like the ACT test, which is a college entrance test everybody at the University of Alaska takes, St. Mary's students scored no higher than students from any other boarding school. In fact, because many of them were more traditional, from more traditional villages, and English was not their first language, they scored worse. But despite, in some cases, extraordinarily low scores in the 0 to 10 range, they tended to do better in college. It seemed to me to be a combination of a couple of things. One was they had work habits. They knew how to study. They were comfortable with studying. They knew what education was all about. When I interviewed college students as part of another study, the St. Mary students were the only ones who would talk to me about the importance of learning concepts, not facts, and using education to understand the world and to understand life. They were interested in school. So the study habits were one important thing. And another, I think, had to do with emotional well-being. The St. Mary's kids, so many counselors said, they were just well put together. Many times, Native students or any student who doesn't do well in college, it has very little to do with their academic background or competence, but because they're overwhelmed by personal problems. And the St. Mary's students seemed to have that aspect of their life pretty much sorted out, and they were able to get on with the work.
Were they just good kids to begin with, or was it St. Mary's going through St. Mary's, or how to explain this? And you devote several pages to explaining it. But.
Well, that was part of the puzzle. That was one of the real mysteries. Did St. Mary's do nothing but, as the public school teachers kept saying, it's one of those mixed metaphors that always send shivers down my spines. Were they creaming the crop, taking the best students from the villages and sending them to St. Mary's? What goes in goes out,
yeah.
They would say. And I think that's part of what happened. But it's a lot more complicated than taking the best kids and sending them through. For one thing, in terms of academic abilities, St. Mary's did not take the best kids. They took kids who were less westernized, who came into school with much lower test scores than the kids who went to public schools. For another, they didn't do much in the way of selection. That is, most students who applied were taken, and St. Mary's rejected primarily those students who were behavior problems, real serious social problems. They argued that they didn't have the counseling facilities to take care of it. But what was actually going on, even though the school didn't do much selection, was the students were selecting a school. And students from a particular village or a particular type of student, usually a more traditional student from a more religious family and a family that was more stable with fewer social problems, would be the ones that would be going to St. Mary's.
I have to stop you because there has been, particularly in the time that you were writing, a waiting list to get in, and it was people were eager to get in, and there was some element of competition, I think, to get into the school. So there would be some more of a selection process than just culling out the ones that were just.
Well, they said that it was a first-come, first-served basis, so the waiting list actually had to do with those people who had applied late. Family traditions would operate. Older brothers who had gone through and thought it was a good place would try to help their younger siblings come in. So it wasn't a selection process like going to Harvard or some of the Eastern schools, but it was a selection process in the sense that subtle things were happening that made a particular kind of student go to St. Mary's. What I came to realize, though, as I was studying the school, that it wasn't so simple as a particular type of student goes and a particular type graduates, but rather part of the way that St. Mary's was influencing students had to do with the creation of peer groups that supported what the school was trying to do. In many schools, for example, boarding schools, well, to give you an example from one of them, the schools I studied, the dormitory was very upset, the dormitory counselors, about the amount of drinking that was occurring on weekends. It wasn't only the drinking, it was the problems with knives and bottles and so forth that were putting some students in fear of other students, and they wanted to control it. So one thing they did was hold a big meeting. I was there. There were 100-some students. We were all sitting around the gym's floor, and the dormitory director got up, and he gave a speech that was really heartfelt about how much he loved the kids and how he had been there for years and how much of his own life was invested in this school and that drinking was just ruining it for everyone. And he said, "Now, can you tell me you're not going to do this anymore? Just raise your hands and tell me." Well, a few of the ninth graders put up their hands. They quickly saw that none of the seniors, the cool guys, were putting up their hands, and they put it down. Now, that's an example of a peer group at work, and the peer group was telling those young kids that you don't go along with what the administration is trying to do at this school. Well, at St. Mary's, it was just the opposite. They had selected, in these subtle ways, students who wanted to be there and who upheld the school's norms. So the students themselves would model the behavior that was expected and would enforce the norms with other students. To give you an example, in one of the areas of the research, we did videotapes of the school, partly in order to let the students get accustomed to the equipment. I gave the videotape camera to one of the older boys who was a junior high student and very cool looking. And I said, "Here, go ahead, interview your friends, pretend you're a radio announcer, do what you want." So he went over to the other side of the dorm where the ninth graders were, and he said to one of the boys, "What's your name?" And the boy froze and didn't want to talk. And the older student said, "What do you mean? You don't know your name? Come on, what did you do today?" And he was pressing for verbal, articulate speech and made it only too clear that the boys' "I don't knows" were just not acceptable around this school. So you had a sense where the students of the school were really doing a lot more teaching and a lot more upholding of the norms than the teachers would have done.
And it doesn't have that reverse effect as sort of, it's good for the school, though it's got to be bad for kids, I won't go along with it, which is...
Yeah, there was a lot of grumbling among the students, especially the boys, about the amount of work the kids had to do and the chores and so on. But the teachers were doing the same amount of work. Their Saturday mornings were spent hauling food from the warehouse, too. So it was always on the level of an individual grumble, not a group that was just against the school.
In the next program in this series, Judith Kleinfeld will unravel another part of the St. Mary's mystery. We'll discuss the unusual nature of St. Mary's teachers and staff when we talk about her book, Eskimo School on the Andreevsky. I'm Paula Schiller, and this has been a production of KUAC-FM at the University of Alaska in Fairbanks.